What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Let's kick this thing off.
Jeremy Allaire is the co-founder and CEO of Circle, the company behind USDC, which is issued by regulated financial institutions, backed by fully reserved assets, redeemable on a one-to-one basis for US dollars. In this conversation, we discuss USD Coin, how it works, the current progress, how Circle makes money, the most popular use cases, their partnership with Visa, decentralized finance, treasury management products, and streaming money. I really, really enjoyed this conversation with Jeremy, and I think you will as well. Before we get into the episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is Polymarket, the world's leading information markets platform where you can trade on the most pressing global questions. You can choose from a variety of markets to trade. Will Trump launch a new social media platform? Will NFT trading volume continue to skyrocket? With over $100 million traded in the last 6 months, Polymarket is the go-to platform to trade on the odds of future events. Think you know more than the market? Trade on your beliefs and earn a return if you're right. Do you want tomorrow's news today? Use Polymarket to see real-time data on what the market thinks will happen. No fake news, no pundits without skin in the game. Head on over to polymarket.com and make an account today with the referral code POMP. Again, polymarket.com, use the referral code POMP. Every Monday until May 10th, you can win $500 by participating in their Twitter giveaway using hashtag PolyWhale. Go to the description and click on the link for more information. Again, polymarket.com, use referral code POMP. Go do it. I promise you'll like it. Next up is my friends over at OKX. Crypto moves fast and many crypto-focused companies can't keep up. The exchanges that cut through the noise are the ones that give you access wherever you are in the world to the cutting-edge projects emerging in this new asset class. If you're looking for an industry leader that gives you access to a huge variety of crypto assets, tools, and services, I'd recommend OKX. Whether that's access to a wide variety of new crypto asset listings that follow industry trends, or if you're not into trading, a suite of crypto earning tools where you can securely deposit your crypto and earn interest, OKX is your one-stop shop. Even though OKX is primarily a crypto-to-crypto platform, meaning you trade one cryptocurrency for another, I like that they offer an easy entry point for the many people who are new to this asset class. On OKX, you can easily use your credit or debit card to buy top cryptocurrencies with almost 40 different fiat currencies, including euros, Canadian dollars, and the British pound. Open an account today at OKX.com/pomp, OKEX.com/pomp, OKEX.com/pomp. Last but not least is Exodus. They are leading the world out of the traditional financial system by building beautiful and user-friendly blockchain products. With their focus on design and user experience, Exodus has become one of the most popular and loved cryptocurrency apps. They're supported on both desktop and mobile, allowing you to sync your wallet across multiple devices so you can have access to your funds anywhere. You can instantly exchange around 100 different cryptocurrencies straight from your wallet. Interactive charts let you view an asset's price history and your portfolio's performance over time. And maybe the best part, Exodus is integrated with the Treasure Hardware wallet, making advanced security easy for everyone. Visit Exodus.com for your free download or search Exodus on the App Store or the Play Store. Again, Exodus.com for a free download or search Exodus on the App Store or the Play Store. Let me know what you think once you go there. All right, let's get into this episode with Jeremy. I hope you enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, bang, bang. I've got Jeremy here with me. Thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
For sure. Let's just jump right into it. Give us a refresher on USD Coin. What is it and how does it work?
Yeah, absolutely. So USDC is something that we started working on in 2017 and then launched in 2018. USDC was sort of envisioned to be what I like to call like a protocol layer for money on the internet. And when I think about money, obviously there's like crypto money, like Bitcoin and Ether. And then you have sort of quote unquote traditional money, which is essentially like liabilities of a central bank. So how can we take like liabilities of a central bank, represent those as a digital currency, and then let them transact in the same way that you can transact other cryptocurrencies through a protocol for kind of payment and settlement on a blockchain. So USDC very much conceived of that, and ultimately with the idea that it could be a protocol that lots of people could connect to, anyone could implement, whether you're, you know, a consumer product, a business, you know, a wallet, what have you. But when we designed it, we wanted it to be something that was regulated, because if people are going to really depend on this as a dollar, you know, a dollar, a sort of a digital currency dollar, it needs to have the assurances of being, you know, issued by a regulated financial institution, have, you know, the sort of compliance and security and audit and all the things that kind of go along with that, so that people understand that for every dollar that is issued in a digital token, that those are reserved and that there's oversight of that. There's, you know, global accounting firms, there's examiners, regulators, there's banks that are regulated that look at and manage those reserves. So it's sort of a, you know, it is a trusted model. It is not fully a trustless model, but it's a trusted model for dollar digital currency. So, you know, essentially a person or a business, a person could, or a business can say, go to a Circle, open an account, and essentially convert from, you know, a bank transfer into USDC. They can have USDC issued and they can also redeem. We also, you know, work really closely with Coinbase as a critical partner in this. And so you can also kind of go to Coinbase and create and redeem USDC as well. So it's, you know, that's what USDC is. It's grown enormously. It's you know, like a year ago, it was like 500 million in circulation. Today, there's 13.2 billion in circulation. So growing at a pretty amazing rate and thousands of companies kind of supporting and implementing it today.
Where's all the growth coming from? Like, why has it grown so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, we really started to see this tremendous growth really dating back to right around kind of when the pandemic hit in Asia, you know, first started hitting in Asia last year. And then it picked up as the pandemic spread. And I think part of this was just in general a shift into digital currency that started to take place, both, you know, as a store of value, as a form of investment capital, and we saw, you know, demand globally. So we saw demand for these sort of dollar digital currency units from Latin America, Africa, Asia, other places. So just in general, that started to grow as digital asset markets themselves have grown. USDC has sort of become synonymous with being sort of the dollar market infrastructure, a sort of a trusted, liquid, redeemable dollar market infrastructure for that space. And so just in line with the growth in digital asset markets. And then really notably, you know, we very early on, even back in 2018, when we were launching this, we focused a lot of energy on working with emerging projects that were building decentralized finance and DeFi protocols, and you know, started to see traction with those in 2019. And then, you know, just as those have taken off, you know, over the last year, USDC has sort of grown significantly alongside it. So when you look at the compounds and the Aaves and the Uniswaps and those kinds of platforms, USDC plays a huge role in those as well. So we've grown with that. And then the last piece is basically, as this, you know, as USDC grows in circulation and more individuals or businesses hold it, they're basically seeing that it has really incredible utility value. You know, you can settle a transaction, you know, in minutes with settlement finality. I mean, a lot of the same assurances that you get from like a Bitcoin transaction, you get with a dollar transaction. And people who understand like the power of cryptocurrency are like, this is just a better way to settle transactions. And so we're seeing just a lot of growth in various payments and settlement use cases. Even, you know, recently Visa itself, you know, building USDC natively into Visa's core network as a currency, as a settlement rail for their network, which is really amazing. So it's sort of moving into these other spaces. And obviously that's a big part of the vision for where it goes.
One of the most popular questions that I get whenever I bring up USDC is just, how the hell does Circle make money? Explain kind of the way that you interact with this, the work you guys do obviously to support it, but then also how you make money.
Yeah. So, I mean, Circle has a few different revenue streams, basically. So obviously we kind of operate the USDC market infrastructure, and we basically provide that almost like a public utility. And so, like, you know, a business, an institution can enroll in a Circle account. We only service businesses directly. And can, at no cost, basically create and redeem USDC. We administer it, we run it, et cetera. And obviously as part of that, as a regulated financial services company, we also manage those reserves, that $13.2 billion in reserves. And so there is some revenue that comes from that. And then the second is we launched, really starting last spring, a whole family of kind of transaction and treasury infrastructure services that were built up around it. So basically providing all of the APIs that a company would need to connect the existing bank networks, like, bank transfers, wire transfers, credit cards, debit cards, and wire that right into USDC settlement, the infrastructure for, wallets and custody and storage for people who want to, use that within their own treasury operation, whether it's a B2B or B2C product. And that kind of collection of platform services is a very big revenue driver for the company, as lots and lots of companies are building on this, and they essentially need that kind of financial infrastructure for their own products and services. So that's a big revenue driver for us. And then we have some new revenue streams we're launching, but we also operate the largest equity crowdfunding platform in the United States, which is Seed Invest, which is a pretty significant revenue driver for us too.
Got it. Talk a little bit more about kind of the treasury management in terms of your guys' end. So a lot of people know that there's other stable coins where they basically take the reserves and they generate yield or revenue from it. There's a whole bunch of speculation around just how much risk is taken there versus some of the stable coins versus others. Like, how do you think about generating that yield? Are there specific things that you guys do, both from a risk mitigation standpoint and also a revenue generation view?
Well, so I kind of break it into two pieces. The first is, Circle is regulated and supervised by, state banking regulators. And we have a very strict, what I call kind of regulatory perimeter for the permissible investments behind electronic money, behind kind of electronic stored value money. So, and that's supervised and examined by examiners. And there's also OCC regulations that came into, guidelines that came out last year as well, that has to do with, if you are in fact, say a reserve bank that is providing reserve capacity to a stable private stablecoin issuer, the kind of fundamental examination requirements of that. So it's pretty tightly bounded, and we obviously have large global accounting firms attesting to the fact that we're meeting all of our obligations there as well. So it's pretty narrow. Like, we can't go out and take risk. Basically, it is pretty narrow. On the other hand, what's happening is there's these incredibly fast growing lending markets in USDC itself. And so a lot of the yield generation is essentially blockchain mediated borrowing and lending markets. Some of those are done through centralized institutions like crypto prime brokerage firms. And some of that is done through decentralized markets like, Compound Protocol, Aave Protocol, things like that. Those markets where there are borrowers and lenders of USDC are really, really meaningful. And that's where, we have a product, our high yield digital dollar accounts for businesses, that's imminently going to become available and will allow a corporation, their own working capital, their own treasury to kind of allocate into USDC yield, which is really, providing a very simple, regulated, secured environment to access that kind of market.
Explain a little bit more in those markets, whether they're kind of the centralized or decentralized versions. Why are people borrowing? And then what are they doing with the USDC once they borrow?
Yeah, I mean, so you have a wide range of use cases there. Obviously, you're familiar with like the BlockFi's of the world. So people are borrowing USDC sometimes because they don't want to sell their Bitcoin, but they want to buy a car, or they don't want to sell their Bitcoin and they want to put a down payment on a house, or so it's essentially people who are borrowing against other crypto assets that they have because they believe that that's a good strategy. So that's one, and that exists at the retail and institutional level, obviously around the market. You also have a phenomenon of, I think in general, and this has proven to be a pretty sound strategy over the past 10 years, but a lot of folks that are in the digital asset space are fundamentally, if not entirely structurally long things like Bitcoin. And again, that's proven to be a pretty good strategy over 10 years. It's probably, you know, in my view, again, this is not investment advice. My view is that I think it's probably a pretty good strategy over the next 10 years. Basically people are borrowing USDC because they're structurally long BTC and they want to be able to continue to invest and trade. And so that's a big borrower, a big driver of borrowing demand, but it's evolving. So we're seeing, again, this gets into like USDC is becoming more of a payment and settlement medium. People want to utilize it as a working capital medium. So for example, you're seeing, more like venture debt type models where basically people are underwriting working capital needs of, say, a crypto mining firm that needs to do CapEx build out and they want to borrow in USDC because that's the transactional medium of the crypto economy in some of these cases, right? So you're seeing kind of more like traditional borrowing happen at the institutional level that's starting to work its way into these loan books. And I think that will continue. I think our thesis is that as USDC in circulation grows, as it becomes more widely accepted as a payment and settlement medium, then lots of businesses and individuals are going to want to borrow it because it's a better form factor for a dollar than what I call ACH money or M2 money as we know it.
Yeah. How big can this get, right? So you've gone from about $500 million to $13.2 billion. Is this a $100 billion opportunity? Is it a $1 trillion opportunity? Yeah. How big do you think it can get?
We think it's far larger than a $1 trillion opportunity. Our view is really that if today, in some ways, the total addressable market for something like, a USDC is, in our view, it's M2. So M2 today globally is about $100 trillion. And so that's commercial bank money. That's electronic money in the traditional commercial bank form factor. We believe that digital currency form factors are going to be superior to traditional commercial bank or ACH money form factors. And so over a long period of time, we think that there is a share shift. There's a share shift to both businesses, individuals, others wanting to keep value in stablecoin models. And so we certainly think it has the ability to get into the trillions. If you look at dollar money markets today, I think they're about 5 trillion. So I think there's a lot of ways to look at that. And this is like, digitization of music. How big was the market for digital music back when everyone had CDs or streaming television or, long tail e-commerce markets like Amazon or eBay? All of these, I think, are very, very large. And you just have to pick your time frame, right? Is it $1 trillion in 5 years? Is it $5 trillion in 10 years? But I think about it as the share shift that will take place into this natively form factor of digital money over a 5 to 10 year period. It should get to, I think, 10% of what the TAM might be today.
Do you feel like digital currencies in general are simply going to replace what you call ACH money? Or do you think that they're more market expanding? And kind of the corollary for those that are listening is essentially Uber, you could have said, hey, they're going to disrupt taxis. Or you could have said, no, they're actually going to expand the market. And what's going to happen is a lot of people aren't going to own cars because they're just going to Uber everywhere. And so how do you view that with these digital currencies versus ACH?
Yeah, so I think... the way I look at it is twofold. I think one is in terms of like the actual like money supply, like M1 or M0, right? We don't really impact that, right? So that is still sovereign debt, basically, right? So we don't impact that. This is just a form factor on top of that. Do I think that it will be market expanding? Yes, but in the following way. Just like, I used to use this example, like when the web came about, I used to make this argument. This is my first company was Tools for Building Web Applications, right? That the net world output of software created was going to grow exponentially because it's going to be basically instantly, it's going to be cheap to basically create, to distribute software through browsers. Or when, you know, email came out, like the net world output of text-based communications exploded like enormously. And so as you've had basically open networks that allow, you know, in historical, you know, terms on the internet, data to flow instantly for free, basically the volume of activity increased dramatically. And so my view is very similar, that essentially digital currency native payments infrastructure over time will drive the cost of payments to zero. So the ability to sort of charge a fee to move value, or the ability to charge a business a fee for them to receive value, will approach zero over time. And as you reduce friction, you increase speed, you increase velocity, it's every internet device in the world connected to this. And you have that kind of speed and velocity of the internet, the net world output of payments will increase exponentially. So I actually do think it's market expanding in terms of the volume, just overall transaction volume in the global economy will increase as a result of digital currency.
That makes sense. And I think one of the big questions that people don't understand and ask me to ask is when you think of a digital currency today, you are essentially a private company who has taken a fiat currency and you're digitizing it, right? And obviously the market wants this. You've grown incredibly fast. But now there's a lot of central banks that are talking about creating their own digital currencies. The idea would be same monetary policy, just this new technology form factor, and whether it's a digital dollar, euro, yen, yuan, you know, name your currency. They essentially would end up in what is a very similar place to where USDC is today for the digital dollar. Do you look at that as competition? Is that something where there's a partnership opportunity? Is that something where maybe actually the U.S. government, central bank, treasury, et cetera, should just adopt USDC? Like, how do you see that playing out as they kind of further explore this idea?
Yeah, I mean, lots of things to talk about there. So just maybe to answer your last question first, we absolutely see opportunities to partner with national governments around the world. And we believe that, you know, open source, open internet, technical innovation, public chain innovation, all of the velocity of things that are happening with that, combined with, you know, kind of technology driven private sector work, is moving at an incredible velocity. It's moving very, very fast. It's going to move way faster than government-sponsored R&D initiatives. And so ultimately, I do think that leads to a place where there is real collaboration. But I think to step back, though, I think, you know, a lot of times people don't really realize that electronic money today, virtually everywhere in the world, is issued by the private sector. So when you think about, electronic wire money, which is the first form of electronic money, that's issued by commercial banks. Central banks sort of approve this as an electronic medium, but it's run by a consortium of private companies. It's run by a consortium of private companies in an organization called SWIFT. SWIFT is hundreds or thousands of private sector firms collaborating on technical standards and interoperability. You take the most popular form of electronic money that we have today, which is credit cards and debit cards, that's privately issued electronic money. It is associations and consortiums of private sector actors getting together to define standards and interoperability, which is exactly what the card associations were born to do. And it's all privately issued. ACH money is the same thing. ACH networks are consortium of private sector actors coming up with common standards for bank-to-bank transfer. It's privately issued money. So the world today is consortiums of tech, of open standards, or of standards, at least interoperability standards, and privately issued models. That's worked pretty well for most of the world. Now, even in China, where, you know, there's obviously a lot of attention on the digital yuan, I think if you really look closely, there's two things going on. One is China leapfrogged the entire world in privately issued electronic money in terms of digital money. Alipay and Tencent and WeChat Pay, you know, a billion people were using these as privately issued electronic money on a massive scale. Now, in a place like China, that was viewed as too much unchecked private power. And so the development of the digital yuan is largely a response to the unchecked private power of these very, very, very large private institutions. And you're seeing that kind of get reined in a variety of ways. And so China's a little bit unique in that, you know, the government's largely run by engineers. and they build stuff. Like they build a lot of things. And that's not really the model in most of the Western capitalist and many other markets in the world, where it really is technology innovation, entrepreneurial innovation, private sector actors, you know, free market, open competitive environments. That's what has allowed innovation to thrive in the capitalist world, or at least the democratic capitalist world. And I think that that will continue to serve this, you know, many parts of the world really, really well. And so I, you know, again, coming back to the last question again, I think this creates tremendous opportunity for consortiums like Center Consortium, which defines the self-governance and regulatory and compliance frameworks around USDC, to really grow, take on more members, more involvement, et cetera.
And so when you think about some of the recent partnerships, I think you guys have one with Visa, a few banks. Is that essentially what you're trying to do, is build these consortiums so that you can create a lot of the buy-in around those standards, and that's kind of the viewpoint and direction you're headed? Or should we think about those partnerships in a different way?
Well, so our partnership with Visa is a specific commercial partnership aimed at driving adoption of USDC in a number of ways that are kind of compatible with the existing Visa network and their network of issuers and merchants. And you know, I think we're seeing some really good initial traction with that. I think in general, Circle is focused on, you know, encouraging and supporting and developing this broader open ecosystem. You know, the beauty of having something like USDC be a public protocol is you don't need to be part of a consortium to adopt it. Thousands of companies have implemented support for it. They don't need to ask anyone's permission. They can, you know, build a digital wallet, or they're an exchange in Korea, or they're somewhere in the world. They can just connect to the protocol on a public blockchain, and it just works. And so I think one is just continuing to foster that open ecosystem. But yes, I think ultimately you'll see more partnerships with established payments companies, established financial institutions, banks, others that are going to play an active role in the development of this ecosystem.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit more about the treasury product that you guys have and we'll be rolling out here a little bit more aggressively. To me, that seems like if you can build a product that you go to every corporation, you say, hey, currently you get, you know, X percent on a money market fund, and there's a bunch of obstacles and friction in terms of managing your treasury, we can do it better, right? Better can be a higher rate of return. Better can be more kind of less friction when it comes to payments, whatever it ends up being. Talk a little bit about why you're so focused there and kind of what you think that inflection point can be for Circle and also for the companies that use that product.
Absolutely. I mean, look, like stepping back, the way that we think about this is that we're going to go through a period where if you're a corporation and you're a corporation that operates on the internet in some way, if you're like an internet native company, which almost every company is becoming in some way, like these sort of internet leaning corporations, you're going to want to leverage this new financial infrastructure. You're going to want to leverage because of its efficiency. You're going to want to leverage it because it allows you to move money faster, cheaper, easier globally or with your own customers. And you're going to want to embrace it as part of your treasury strategy. You're going to want to store value in crypto assets like Bitcoin. You're going to want to store value in, you know, these forms of yield products as well. And so I think that just generally, we think over the coming years, tens of thousands of businesses are going to want to have, you know, corporate treasury accounts with digital currency financial institutions that make it easy for them to use this both as a transactional infrastructure and as a treasury infrastructure. And so we think that's a really significant, very large opportunity. And eventually, millions of businesses are going to want to have accounts and have access to this all around the world. And so to us, it represents really a transformation in, you know, when you think about kind of transaction banking or treasury services, you know, global banks like Citigroup or HSBC or others or Chase that provide accounts for payments and treasury, right? I think digital currency native models for that are ultimately going to become super attractive. And that's what we're excited about. In the short term, I think, yeah, it's very specifically, we're in a low yield environment. Digital asset markets have created an opportunity for high yield environments. And so, yes, there's an opportunity to just see people who want to allocate some of that static, unused working capital into whether it be Bitcoin or dollarized markets as well. We think that there'll be continued growth in that in the next year or two.
I tend to agree. How much of this also empowers something I'm really interested in, which is streaming payments, this idea of lower cost, lower friction payments, whether that's, you know, corporations that say, hey, we're going to completely kind of reinvent the way that we pay our employees. Maybe we want to pay them every day rather than every 2 weeks, or maybe it's some sort of pay as you go model. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people talk about, you know, paying as you consume a podcast or watch a movie or whatever. How much of USDC and the infrastructure that you're building can play a part in that?
Yeah. So we're really bullish on like innovations in payments and value exchange. I think a huge part of the motivation for this goes back 8 years to when we founded Circle, was this idea of programmable money. And it captured a lot of people's imagination. And the idea that, you know, a dollar could be like a native data type on the internet, like a JPEG or a music file, and that you could program it and then you could write code around it. We're in the super early innings of that innovation, right? DeFi protocols themselves are an example of saying, hey, I've got a programmable financial contract. Well, we are seeing smart contracts for streaming payments. There's multiple projects that have integrated USDC, which allow you to do exactly those kinds of things, like have metered out payments, have kind of buffers and escrows, and have events that trigger payments and payouts. I'm excited, very, very excited about what the kind of open developer community is going to do now that you have smart contract infrastructure and you can program money in this way. I think we're going to see innovations in all forms of kind of commerce relationships, labor relationships, trade finance models, invoicing models, escrow models, like so many dimensions of both, you know, individual to business and business to business type of interactions getting mediated by public chain infrastructure. Streaming payments is a great example of that. And it's kind of like the example earlier you touched on with like an Uber, where, you know, when you had like a smartphone that had 3G access and you had a smartphone that had a GPS and you had a smartphone where you could create reasonable GUIs, right? Each one of those was cool. Like, ooh, you can actually have a GUI. Ooh, it's actually a reasonable speed on the internet. So you can actually have an app that performs well. And wow, there's this GPS. But it was the mashup. You put this together. Someone kind of said, hey, if I can mash these up, I can revolutionize, transportation for consumers. It's that creativity that comes up when you have those things and you can put them together. The same thing's going to happen here. None of us can predict the breakthrough applications that are going to be created in this. Incentivized social media networks. You know, we're seeing this with NFTs, and you're seeing with the social currency, kind of model. If you have, a super efficient micropayment infrastructure in something like USDC, which you can do now on, next gen chains like Solana and Algorand and stuff like that, you actually can start to build breakthrough business models. So I'm excited. I think that we're going to see so much there. And I think a lot of times people kind of, they tend to think of, well, we already have electronic payments. Isn't this this? And it kind of misses the point, right? we already had taxis, but there was actually a radical better, a 10x better kind of product that's still waiting to happen.
Yeah, I tend to think that a lot of what is going to get created hasn't even been attempted yet. And most people tend to think somewhat in an evolutionary, but yet elementary way, right? So it's, hey, if I know where we're at point A, then point B is kind of the next thing to think about. It's very hard to kind of see from point A to, what's the 26th point away, right?
Exactly.
So I think that I think you're directionally correct there. What's next for Circle? As you kind of continue to build the business, obviously there's a hope there's continued kind of adoption and demand for USDC. But what else are you excited about? What else are you working on? Or what do you want people to know about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of things. I think about the stuff we're working on. So one is just making sure that the core infrastructure for this can be like web scale, so that you can transact something like USDC with, apps that are built for hundreds of millions of users, and you can transact in fractions of a second with extremely low cost. So it's just making sure it's like, I like to call it like moving from dial-up to broadband. So we want to make sure that the fundamental kind of payment settlement throughput can kind of move from dial-up to broadband, sort of, you know, first and second generation blockchains, and then, you know, sort of third generation blockchains sort of take you there. And so that's a really big focus, because that's coming, whether it be through NFT apps, global payment companies implementing this, innovations in social commerce, like all these things are going to bring a different scale of user base onto this. And so we need to make sure that it can support that. The second is, you know, we're really trying to build out this kind of suite of services for businesses and fintechs that want to build on this. And so, you know, what you can expect to see from Circle is, you know, more and more kind of fundamental building blocks for financial applications, and you know, this sort of core, you know, we think of it as like this commercial treasury account type of product and infrastructure. So more and more from Circle to kind of export, support, you know, not just, you know, blockchain native firms or crypto markets companies, but also more and more mainstream commerce firms getting into this. That's a really big focus. And you know, we also continue to be super, super excited about, you know, what we're doing with Seed Invest, which is extremely fast growing. And we're helping startups all over the place raise capital directly on the internet, larger and larger deals. You know, the crowdfunding exemptions have expanded considerably. And so we have companies doing $20 million raises, $30 million raises, as well as Reg CF, which now allows up to $5 million raises directly from unaccredited investors. And so just continuing to help companies raise capital on the internet. And obviously, we see an opportunity to weave that more closely with digital asset infrastructure as well.
For sure. What keeps you up at night? Like when you think about everything you guys are working on or the industry at large?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a few things. I mean, you know, one is a lot of what I think about is just like making sure we can execute. There's such a big surface area of stuff that we're working on. I know every firm in the crypto space is just like, oh my God, we're growing. There's all this stuff. And just staying in front of that velocity and coverage area, it's really hard. You know, we're adding hundreds of new employees to Circle, you know, this year, and you know, just doing that is really, really hard. I think, you know, I wouldn't say it keeps me up at night, but certainly because I generally sleep really well every night, but and I know you do too. I'm religious about sleep, as it were. But you know, I think like what's happening with crypto right now, it has reached a different level of awareness. And it's actually gotten to the point where governments are genuinely, you know, befuddled, afraid, uncertain. And, you know, you're going to see some stupid decisions get made. And you're just going to see some stupid decisions get made. You're going to see people make rash decisions. And so I think we really believe that, you know, this, you know, open financial system, this crypto native economic infrastructure, you know, building this vision, this world is truly better for the world. It truly delivers more, you know, opportunities for individuals and businesses everywhere. But, you know, there's going to be this tug and pull, right? There's going to be this tug and pull of people wanting to kind of keep the genie in the bottle, wanting the existing framework and systems and governance and other things to kind of be what they are, and not really willing to embrace the much broader, you know, changes that crypto involves. And so I think there's a high threshold. I think national governments are going to have more involvement, and that puts a lot of pressure on the industry. And so that's something that's significant that we think about a lot. And we just brought on Dante Disparte as Chief Strategy Officer and Head of Global Policy. And he's really spent the last couple of years meeting with major government officials all around the world around these digital currency issues. And so we're investing pretty aggressively in policy issues, because we know that as this grows, as this becomes more mainstream and it rolls out around the world, we need to be there, you know, helping make sure that you know, ultimately we're on the right side of history.
So last question for you. Are you still having fun?
I'm having a great time. This is awesome. I mean, look, you know, I've known you for a while and we got started 8 years ago, right? And 8 years ago when we started Circle and I told people I'm creating like a digital currency bank or whatever, people were like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, you know, and people wouldn't even talk to me because they thought they might get in trouble, you know, for taking a meeting with someone who's working on, you know, something with Bitcoin. But, you know, obviously things have changed a lot. a lot of the ideas that we had, you know, I was looking at my Series A deck the other day just for kind of reminiscing. It's like all these ideas that we had, they're happening now. Like this is actually happening. Like this, so many of these things are actually happening. And, you know, I knew that these were going to be these 5 to 10 to 20 year cycles to do this, but I really feel like right now, so many of the things that got so many people involved in this industry in the first place are really being realized. And so it's super exciting. It's really, really exciting and really rewarding.
I asked that question because I can tell you're having fun, which is which is half the battle, right? That's what keeps you going.
Yes, yes, you have to. And anyone who knows me knows that I tend to be a fairly optimistic person.
Optimism wins, man. Optimism wins. Yes. All right. Where can we send people to find you on the internet or learn more about Circle or Circle's products?
Absolutely. So I'm Jer Allaire on Twitter. And circle.com is straight up where you're going to find everything you need about Circle.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, thank you so much for doing this, Jeremy. We'll have to do it again in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Pom.